Joining us now on the Wisconsin Sports Radio Network guest hotline, powered by Gruber Law, one call, that's all, from The Athletic and the Tundra Podcast with John Kuhn from 9 to noon, our friend Matt Schneiman joins the show. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, we are doing great today, bud. We're so good. Everyone's happy. Aaron's upset, and I don't know why. It's just he's upset because the Brewers haven't made all the moves to win a World Series yet. And I'm going, they won yesterday, and it's a nice day out. Can we just enjoy today? I don't know. We're working through that.
The trade deadline is still, what, a
couple weeks away.
Trade deadline? Yeah. Over a week away?
Yeah.
Still plenty of time for moves.
Right. See, Aaron? There's still time. Anyway, that's not important. What's important is that also a week away is training camp. Packers training camp is going to be here before you know it. And I am going to, and we are going to talk to you about a lot of things with the Packers and what we're to expect from training camp and this season, some of the moves that were already made. But first, I talked to you about this when we were texting yesterday. Mike Florio, who is beloved across the state of Wisconsin, so many people love the man, had an opinion piece that he did. Apparently they do this like during breaks where they do this kind of ask me anything, and someone had reached out to him about the Packers, and he goes into this whole opinion piece on how the Packers could now, Ed Policy could be that guy that would, knowing that when he hits a certain age, he's going to be kicked out anyway, could be the guy to sell the team and change the whole structure of the Green Bay Packers and have the Packers be owned by a billionaire owner so that they can compete with these other organizations, these other franchises. When we talked about it, Matt, you said, this is old news. We talked with Ed Policy about this, which is exactly why I wanted to talk to you about it. Is this going to continue to be a topic of conversation when football isn't being played?
Well, I want to be clear with this. I didn't watch the video. The storyline of are the Packers going to be sold to a billionaire owner? That's a non-story. That's not going to happen. What the story was how can the Packers kind of keep up in these financial times? And it all stemmed from a interview Ed Policy did with Sports Business Journal back in March, I think. So When you sent me that, I was like, Mike is entitled to whatever opinion he wants to have. The idea that Ed Policy could sell the team or the Packers would be sold to a billionaire owner, that's not happening. That's not a possibility. What is a possibility in order to generate revenue and keep up with these other teams who do have these deep pocketed owners and can do the private equity thing is, you know, these concerts that the Packers have at Lambeau, is selling naming rights to things. And the most controversial part of this conversation that happened a couple months ago was, would the Packers ever sell the naming rights to Lambeau Field? Like the Dodgers just did with their stadium. The Yankees haven't done it. Wrigley obviously hasn't done it. There are some iconic stadiums that aren't meant to be, you know, Quick Trip Stadium at Lambeau Field or something right. Like that. You get what I'm saying? That would be the biggest moneymaker for this team. But Ed Policy said that hopefully in his lifetime that doesn't happen.
But does
they can sell naming rights to the practice facility. They can sell naming rights to, you know, different gates at the stadium. There are different ways to generate revenue for the team that aren't sacrificing the, you know, innocence of the Lambeau Field name, but selling the team itself and switching from the publicly owned model, that wasn't even part of the conversation.
But that was the Florio opinion piece. His whole getting there was saying that eventually, even if they did start selling naming rights things, that eventually this model doesn't work and that it would get to that point to keep up. And that had me just saying, how many more times and where did this come from of this idea that the Packers aren't able to stay competitive with other organizations and needing to find more ways to make money and do these things to stay relevant? I feel like in the last, essentially since Ed Policy got there, this became news, and now it's still news, and I'm wondering at what point does this go away? Is this really a thing that we're going to be talking about for years and years to come of how, well, the Packers need more money? Well, now the Packers still need more money. Is this a thing?
Not to me. maybe some people sporadically will bring it up like Mike did here, but it's only a conversation if you make it a conversation, right?
Sure, but it's not a concern, is your point. Like, there, no. People are bringing it up. It's not something that is a problem that will continue to exist until it's dealt with. It's not one of those type of problems.
No, I don't think it's a problem rooted in reality right now, no.
Great. Okay, then we can all go back to not watching the 9.5-minute video from Mike Florio. Okay, let's go and talk then about the contracts that have been given out to Packers players. Obviously, Devontae Wyatt was the most recent one, 3 years, $57 million to Devontae Wyatt. How did you feel about that number for Wyatt and him being extended?
Yeah, as with all these deals, you have to wait to see what the real numbers are, because what Christian Watson's contract was first reported as was like $20 million off of what it actually was. But on the surface, if these numbers are real, the 3 years, $57 million, that $19 million average annual salary makes Devontae Wyatt the 18th highest paid interior defensive lineman in the league, which seems like a fair price. I mean, He's not the best. He's not the worst. But he's the Packers' best, and you have to extend your best. So I think they did well with this one. He was 32nd last year in pressure rate among all defensive linemen, not just interior guys. Micah Parsons loves the guy, and after that Dallas game where the Packers tied 40-40, Micah was asked what happened to the run defense in the second half, and he said, well, Devontae Wyatt got hurt in the second quarter. So his production hasn't always, you know, opened eyes, but he's the best the Packers have there. And I think when healthy, he has showed, especially in recent years, that he's worthy of this extension. As we know, the Packers kind of slow burn these defensive linemen, whether it's Rashawn Gary, Lucas Van Ness, Devontae Wyatt. Like, these first rounders don't come in and have an immediate impact. But we've started to see the impact that Devontae Wyatt can have, and I expect him to be on the field next Wednesday when we see our first practice. The injuries that he suffered last year on Thanksgiving were described by him as ones that take 3 to 5 months to recover from. So I anticipate seeing him on the field come next Wednesday.
And is to Tucker Kraft and his extension. I think a lot of people have been operating, fans, maybe even people covering the team, players on the team have been acting like this is a foregone conclusion. He's going to sign an extension. They're going to get it done, but they haven't yet. And there is a case to be made that it might not get done if Tucker Kraft has a number much higher than the Packers are willing to go at this point. How long do you expect this conversation to be ongoing between the two sides? And is this more in doubt than maybe we've been operating all offseason?
No, this is going to happen. And I think I can say that with pretty steadfast confidence. It's just a matter of time. Now, when that is, I'm not sure. I don't know if Tucker's one of those guys like Devontae Adams was in 2021, where it's once the season hits, I'm not negotiating. But this is a guy who I would not be surprised if he resets the market at tight end. The highest paid tight end right now is George Kittle at $19.1 million a year. I would not be surprised to see Tucker Kraft get more than that. When he went down last year in week 9, he was top 3 in receiving yards, touchdown catches, and yards after catch per reception among tight ends. Add in what he does blocking, what he does for that locker room. He was the youngest elected captain by his teammates last year. And quite frankly, in the you know, now 7-8 years that I've been covering the Packers, the youngest captain they've had. I need to check my notes on that, but He's going to be worthy of whatever extension he gets. I think he is clearly a top 5 tight end in the league, probably better. But it's just a matter of, will the Packers be willing to pay him that money coming off a major injury? And I would say yes to that, because there's a precedent for it. They made Jaire Alexander the highest paid corner in NFL history coming off that shoulder injury that sidelined him 13 games. In 2021, yes, he did play in that playoff game against the 49ers, but he was still coming off a major injury. And will Tucker and the Packers be able to reach that resolution before he steps on the field in training camp? And would Tucker be willing to negotiate even after he steps on the field? My two cents, and obviously I'm not Tucker Kraft and there's a reason for that, but I would want that deal before I come back and risk re-injury from a major knee injury. And if you're the Packers, maybe you want to see him play well before you give him all that money. So both sides are justified in those opinions. But if I had to guess, I would say this is something that gets done before training camp.
So you think he's going to reset the market higher than George Kittle, who a lot of people think is the best tight end in football, and Tucker Kraft hasn't had the career, obviously, to this point that Kittle has in each year of production. Is this mostly just a, this is how NFL contracts work, and the next guy is going to reset the market if he's even close? Even maybe if Tucker isn't better than George Kittle or hasn't been, you know, as deserving maybe of that money to this point, it's just how it goes?
Right, yeah. NFL contracts and these extensions, as you guys know, and as people listening know, are far more about projection of what's to come and market value than what you've done. Jordan Love had one half-good season starting under his belt when he was paid $55 million a year, which at the time tied for the highest paid quarterback in NFL history. That was because of what the Packers projected him to do beyond that contract and because of what the open market dictated. Same thing with Tucker Kraft. He's had half of a season worthy of being the highest paid tight end in the league. That's by that metric, he shouldn't be. But it's about what you project him to do in the future and the projection that in 3-4 years down the road, this will be a bargain. Just like with Jordan Love, you look now and he's still up there among the highest paid in the league, but you think, okay, there are guys who are higher paid than him, and Jordan Love is arguably a top 5, 6, 7 quarterback in the league. I'm fine with that price. Same thing could happen with Tucker Kraft in a couple of years. That's just how these things work.
We're talking to Matt Schneidman of The Athletic and the Tundra podcast here on The Steve Zabin Show with Josh Albrecht. Matt, it's been, for the most part, a pretty dry offseason for the Packers as far as news is concerned, beyond, obviously, the Josh Jacobs news was the biggest thing that happened during the offseason. And then now as we get into training camp, we still haven't really heard any update on anything. Have you heard anything since the last time that news kind of broke? And how do you see that playing out as training camp starts?
About Josh Jacobs specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, I, to my knowledge, the case is still open. I imagine I was actually going to send the DA's office an email here at the end of this week because I have a story running on Monday with the 20 most important questions for the Packers this season entering training camp. And one of them is what's going to be the Josh Jacobs resolution. And I know one of the local TV stations here, I believe Channel 5, put out an update a couple weeks ago saying the investigation was still open. I imagine that if it was closed with a resolution one way or the other, that the Brown County DA's office would announce that. So I'm assuming it's still an open investigation. And as we've seen, even with an open investigation, Josh Jacobs would practice with the Packers. I'm sure everyone would like to have a resolution, but I can't sit here and say with 100% certainty that Josh Jacobs will be on the team come the regular season, because I'm just speaking hypothetically. What if criminal charges are brought and then the Packers do their own looking into it after that and decide to cut ties with him? I'm sure the Packers have already looked into it themselves. With however they investigate these things. But as far as we know, from a legal criminal perspective, this is still an open investigation. So there isn't really much to say concretely about how the Packers will move forward or Josh Jacobs' status on the team beyond he'll play while it's under investigation. I mean, it's a tricky thing because we, as people who cover the Packers, haven't really had to deal with this in recent years. Packers don't really get into this kind of stuff. So it's new for everyone, but I think all we can say right now is that it's still open and we don't really know how it's going to resolve itself yet.
So Josh Jacobs was not available for the media at any point through any of the mini camps or anything else. Do you expect that to be just the way it continues through training camp, through the season? I feel like at some point, you know, that needs to change. No?
Well, yeah, once the case is resolved, he's not going to talk when the case is still open. Once the DA's office comes out and says, we're bringing criminal charges or we're not bringing criminal charges. Well, if they are bringing criminal charges, it's a whole nother thing. He may not be in the locker room or on the team to comment. But if they come out and say we're not bringing criminal charges, then Josh will talk. And I'm sure he'll have some sort of statement given that is coached up by his lawyer.
Sure. But I'm saying, like, let's say that this gets to week one and, you know, Josh has a fantastic game. He goes off. He's a star of the game. And, you know, you want to get media getting some quote from Josh Jacobs. Is the team going to have him available in any way, shape, or form to the media if they don't get a word from the DA's office?
That, I think that's different. I was thinking just training camp preseason wise. If it gets into the regular season and he plays, I could see a scenario. I'm not in Jason Waller's shoes or the PR staff's shoes. I could see a scenario where they make him available and just have him, before any questions are taken, say, you know, I'd like to keep it to football questions. I understand that there are questions about my legal case, but since it's still an open investigation, I'd like to respectfully keep it on football until I can comment on that. That's me putting my PR hat on. But I would be surprised if it carries on that long. But then again, it's carried on this long, so who knows?
Hey, Matt, if we're looking at training camp coming up, and if you had to pick one thing that you're just curious about, like watching this team during practice, something you were curious to see what goes on in practice. I know we don't get to see a ton or can learn a ton from what they're doing here, but if you had to pick one thing that you're like, I wonder what that might look like, what could that be?
Will, and how soon will Brandon Cisse earn a starting spot, I think is one thing. Now, I'm not saying he will this year. Jair Alexander didn't start right away. Eric Stokes didn't start right away. It might take an injury. And if it's a lack of performance from Carrington Valentine, say, they're not, I don't think, going to bench him after his first mistake. But I am interested to see whether it's training camp, first half of the season, or even his second season in the league. The Packers didn't draft Brandon Cisse to be a depth piece for 3 years or 4 years. They drafted him to be probably, I'm assuming, their next number one cornerback. Now, when is that going to happen? I know people don't like Keyshawn Nixon. He's still the team's number one cornerback at this juncture. But I can't sit here and honestly say, despite what Brian Gutekunst said, that I was thoroughly impressed with the cornerback play the second half of the season specifically. So I'm going to be looking at Brandon Cisse, and could the seat get hot for especially Carrington Valentine a little bit here in training camp? And would the Packers be willing to pull the trigger and give Cisse some more playing time, even if it's just in like a rotation sort of thing that we've seen at other positions in past years? In training camp, early in the season, when is it going to be? So Cisse's not going to sit on the bench for long here in Green Bay, but I also don't think the Packers are like rushing to get him on the field.